Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today I'm joined by Kevin Duncan and Sarah Duncan to talk about their new book, The Sustainable Business Book. We will also discuss the Planet System, which they have just launched to help businesses improve their sustainability credentials. Kevin Duncan is a business advisor, marketing expert, and best-selling author. His books have been translated into over a dozen languages. He is the author of the Diagrams book, the Ideas book, the Excellence book, the Smart Thinking book, and many more. Sarah Duncan is a sustainable business development and ethical marketing consultant. She has been in business for over 30 years and in 2005 set up her own consultancy, Sleeping Lion. She now helps businesses navigate their way through the world of business ethics and sustainability with advice, support, and bespoke workshops. The Sustainable Business Book provides an essential springboard for any business owner or manager who realizes the importance of running a sustainable business. Thank you very much, Kevin and Sarah, for joining us today on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your latest book, The Sustainable Business Book. So my first question to you is, why did you decide to write the book? Kevin, let's start with you.
Thanks. Yes, well, we've written a lot of books for Lid and lots of them. And this particular one, I think actually it was born out of frustration. And Sarah had been investigating the whole sustainability area for a long time, actually 7 years or so. And we were getting annoyed, really, and frustrated with the lack of action on the topic. And so to cut a long story short, we discussed what we could do about it, and we invented a system, the Planet System, which Sarah will explain. And what we wanted to do was create a thing that anybody could understand and apply very simply and very fast so that we could get this message out to as wide an audience as possible, because we kept encountering people who were just almost making excuses or totally unsure about what to do or couldn't find the right resources or didn't have a budget or just any excuse really. And we thought, well, we can do better than this. So we designed the system, we wrote the book, and then we create a whole online system to go with it so people can self-audit.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I feel many people have been feeling frustrated in the past few years when it comes to sustainability and the environment. And yeah, as you mentioned, this is a very interesting project because you're not just publishing the Sustainable Business Book, but you created and you're going to launch a whole system as titled The Planet System. So yeah, Sarah, let's go on to you, and could you explain to our listeners what that system is and how it can help their companies?
Sure. So as Kevin said, it's designed to be a complete system that helps businesses with this whole complex world of sustainability, or ESG. And just to clarify for anyone who doesn't know, ESG stands for environmental social governance. And it is a complex world, but we try and make it as straightforward and simple as we can do to help people actually move into action. So PLANET stands for Panic, Learn, Agree, Navigate, Enact, and Tell. And so it takes you through from that beginning stage of, my goodness, what is this all about, through to being able to communicate with stakeholders. And this is important because there's a lot of businesses out there at the moment who are leaping towards the telling people about what they're doing, or in many cases not doing yet, or have promised to do by some random date in the future. So this actually forces you to go through a process that takes you into improvements before you stampede towards the marketing bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But then before we start talking more about the system and the book, Let's talk about the definition of business sustainability. And Kevin, probably that would be a better question for you, as you already wrote a dictionary book. So yeah, what's the definition of business sustainability?
Yes, well, just because I've written a bullshit dictionary doesn't necessarily mean I have an authoritative view on this one. But we did discuss it in a lot of detail before we started writing. And approximately, we say that our definition of business sustainability is the creation or re-engineering of a company to be successful while doing as little harm as possible. Now, we're very commercial, and therefore we're keen that everybody who engages with this book and the whole area of sustainability is also very commercial. And of course, they always want to be. In fact, I heard a client define not long ago their interpretation of sustainability as the sustainability of cash flow, would you believe? But obviously that's completely wrong. So what we're talking about is a company that will indeed sustain and endure, in other words, not go to the wall and disappear. But one of the things we're very, very clear about is that this is not just the environmental stuff. We have so many people who immediately interpret the word sustainability and sometimes ESG as the green stuff. And they're straight into talking about recycling bags and planting trees and so forth. And they completely miss out the societal and people issues that are included in the title of sustainability. So what we're interested in is looking after people and societal issues as well as the environmental component. And all of those carefully align with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So it's a much, much bigger issue than just the environment.
It definitely is. And thank you for that definition, Kevin. So your book is separated in a few parts and a few stages, and the first stage is called Facts. So yeah, Sarah, let's talk a little bit about the facts. Why must businesses take care of their sustainability credential? Why is it so vital?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because of course there's a moral answer to that, which is because it's the right thing to do. But actually, there is a commercial imperative here too. So I think it's probably best for us in this context to stick to the commercial reasons why a business would want to become more sustainable and work on the sustainability credentials. So every business is different, but broadly speaking, most businesses out there at the moment will be being impacted in one form or another. That could be if you're selling direct to customers, that could be that you're aware of your customers becoming what we call more conscious. So the rise of conscious consumerism. And that's people who are looking to buy products, goods, services, brands that they feel are being more responsible in terms of society and in terms of the environment. And that makes them feel better about their purchasing. So that could well be a factor. You've also, if you're actually B2B business, business to business, then you're probably becoming very aware that you're part of a supply chain. And now this whole area of ESG is, and particularly net zero, which we won't go into in too much detail today, but decarbonizing your business is putting a lot of scrutiny on supply chain. And so if that's where you are in the kind of value chain, then the chances are that you're having to show your sustainability credentials in order just to get a piece of business, to get on the roster, what we call kind of requests for tenders. There's a lot of activity around that at the moment. Then, of course, you've got your employees. All of the studies are showing that people want to work for businesses that stand for more than just simply making a stack of cash. And this is coming through particularly strongly when we look at millennials and Gen Z, who are already over 50% of the workforce here in the UK. And then you've got other bits and pieces. increasingly the world of investment, value creation, exit planning, they're taking ESG credentials extremely seriously. And finally, although sadly perhaps a little slower paced than the others, we do have legislation. Now, the UK government is still committed to net zero by 2050. And as part of that, even though it might be a bit slow at the moment, I think we can all expect that as we get closer and closer to some of the key dates there, we will see incentives for good behaviour and penalties for bad behaviour. So you add all that together, and actually there is important commercial reasons why a company wants to stand up and take note of all this stuff.
Absolutely. I really like that point. It's not just the ethically right thing to do, to take care of your sustainability credentials, but of course that brings a lot of business benefits as well because of the consumers changing behaviors, and also, as you said, millennials and Gen Z wanting to work for companies that actually care, which says a lot, I think. But yeah, so the facts are part of the first two steps of the system, which is panic and warn. So let's move on to agree. A lot of the time, senior people in a company, they are quite resistant to change. So how do we get the board on board? Kevin, can you answer that for us?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not even sure if it's possible to answer this question, but I'm going to give it a go. I think this is the hardest bit. So if we follow the planet system, the P for panic is what companies need to do if they're really just not even concentrating on the issue at the moment. And then obviously the learn element is get properly informed, please, because so many people in board meetings kind of talk rubbish. They bandy around phrases like net zero and what have you, but they don't really know much about it. And that, of course, means that a lot of the conversations are poorly informed or even incorrectly informed. So when we come to the agree phase, I think this is the most difficult bit. What we find very interesting at the moment is it's almost impossible to find a modern executive in a company who will look you dead in the eye and say, actually, I don't care about sustainability at all. And so what that means is that everybody is saying, yes, yes, we care very, very deeply about this. It's very, very high up our agenda. And then you wait for the action and there isn't any. And then a year later, there's none. And then a year, and so it goes on and on and on. And what's actually going on is that, as you say, loads of people are resistant to change, but they're not actually saying anything about it. Now, this is linked to something that we often find in boardrooms or leadership teams, and we call it artificial harmony. And this is essentially where people are talking, but they're not listening and they're not agreeing. And the important piece of, if you like, human psychology behind this is where, let's say, a chief exec runs a meeting, nobody has a big argument, and nobody says, no, I'm not going to enact this. No, we're not going to do it. I disagree. Instead, they actually say nothing. But the dynamics of the meeting are interpreted as though everybody agrees and are going to go away and take action. But in fact, the absence of a no doesn't mean it's a yes. And so this artificial harmony leads to a weird kind of inertia whereby everybody's talking about doing stuff and everybody's nodding and it all appears excellent, but there's no forward motion at all. So what we need to do is challenge this status quo and, as it were, flush out with information what people are thinking, if they're thinking it, and put people more on the spot. And that's where the facts come in. And if the board isn't on board, which is the phrase we use, then really nothing's going to happen. So those are our main thoughts on that before one gets on to navigating through the organization. But it's the hardest bit, getting people to agree.
Yeah, it definitely is. And as you said, it's about challenging the status quo. But then who is responsible to lead that change towards a more sustainable future in a company? And how do we know who is the right person to do it? Sarah, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, that's an interesting one, because I mean, I don't know if it's because I live in a bit of an echo chamber, but every time I log into LinkedIn now, there's another job post for somebody hiring a sustainability manager. So there's a big, big trend and a big drive to hire people into businesses to lead the sustainability charge, which is sort of great in one hand, but it's also, in my opinion, it's kind of missing the point, because the way this works is when sustainability is what we call an inside job, and that means that it absolutely filters through all elements of the business and is part of every single person within the business's decision-making process. That's when it works. Where it doesn't work is where sustainability is treated like some sort of side project that's either managed by one individual or either a third party, and it's not being properly integrated into the business. So you then got somebody potentially working on lots of policy, but there's a massive gap between that policy and the actual execution of it. There are other examples where sustainability is kind of chucked at a department. Traditionally, in the past, that's been HR or marketing. And again, that's problematic because it often makes their activities, whilst being, you know, really well-intentioned, maybe a bit one-sided, and or at worst, you know, if it's thrown at marketing, then potentially it can lead to kind of over-enthusiastic communications around sustainability without knowing about it properly, and therefore leading to greenwashing. So as Kevin kind of was saying, we absolutely believe that you need everybody on board, and that starts with the board, your senior leadership team. But really importantly, it's got to filter down throughout the whole organization, not just be the responsibility of one single individual.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And yeah, as you both said, it's very difficult to agree what needs to be done. But then quite often we hear companies talking about change and how they're going to do it, but they fail to get it done. So Kevin, how do we enact what has been decided once, of course, it's been agreed?
Yes, well, this is where I get into my kind of hammering the table type of mode, but I'm often working with companies to try to get them to do things, because the talking stuff, there is a limit to it. And it's very, very frustrating when people are still just talking. So in the book, provide 5 provocations for how we can try to make this better and get people to do things. So I'll quickly run through what they are, because they're quite fun, actually, and they can be used in pretty much any context. But in this one, we're specifically applying them to sustainability issues. So the first one is, don't confuse direction with destination. Now, a lot of people think that if you've got an objective, you just see it in the distance, and then you draw a straight line and you head towards it. But that's naive, because that's not what happens. And the more complicated the area is, and sustainability is a very complicated one, the more likely you are to have to course correct as you go along. So it's naive and unsuitable to assume that you're going to get a sustainability initiative done in a very straight line fashion, exactly on the timetable that you want. So it's better if you have intelligent approaches that enable you to take what you might call a squiggly line toward your destination, because you're still getting there, but you're being intelligent in the way you navigate on the way to doing that. So that's the first one. Don't confuse direction with destination. The second one I really like. It's called act yourself into a new way of thinking. And this is a kind of strategy deception where many companies think that because they're thinking about something, they're making progress, but they're not. They're just talking. And this is sometimes linked to an old academic joke, which is, yes, yes, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? In other words, people spend way too much time talking about stuff, but they're not actually changing anything. So you don't think your way into a new way of acting. You act your way into a new way of thinking, which is a simple way of saying, get on and do something and see what the result is, and that will give you better forward motion. So the third one is stick to 20-mile marches. This needs a quick bit of explanation because it's linked to a little story about Scott and Amundsen heading to the South Pole. And the Norwegian Amundsen, he won. He got there first. And what he calculated is that his team, with the weather conditions, the amount of equipment they needed to carry and so forth, haul on sledges over pack ice, his team could average 20 miles a day. Now, Scott was way more random than that. If the weather was bad, he would let his team stay in their tents, and sometimes, therefore, they might only cover, say, 7 miles a day. But if the weather was really, really good, he let them carry on up to, say, 27 miles, and then they would just wear themselves out. So the net result is they were losing ground on the bad days, and they were gaining ground but being exhausted on the following days. And so the moral of the story is that if you stick to 20-mile marches, in other words, your equivalent of what is an appropriate piece of progress to make during a given time period, then you won't undershoot, but equally you won't exhaust your team to the point where things start going wrong. So I think that's a really nice little anecdote. Consistency is essentially the watchword there. But two more to go. The fourth one is precrastinate, don't procrastinate. It's human nature to put things off. But actually, if you precrastinate, you bring forward the stuff that is actually quite easy to do. And in the book, we've got a little matrix, and it's all about what are the quick wins that you can make with the maximum effect and the minimum effort as soon as possible, which of course means you've got true forward motion and you're increasing morale and enthusiasm and keeping the momentum of the initiatives going. So that, if you like, is choosing the path of least resistance. So precrastination. And finally, it's really just a point about pursuing progress, not perfection. Perfection is often the enemy of progress, because so many people and teams will sit around saying, we can't quite launch that. We've done 9 of the 10 things, but not the 10th, so it's not quite ready. So let's just hold on for a bit. And if you do that as a way of working perpetually, you can find that 15 months later, you haven't done anything at all. And it's completely unacceptable and it's no good to anybody. So unusually, perhaps, and perfectionists don't like it, you have to say, yep, that's good enough for the moment. It's the most advanced yet acceptable. Let's get on with it. And we will make some improvements a little bit later on one or two bits and pieces that aren't perfect. So pursue progress, not perfection.
Mm. Yeah, I really like those 5 points. And I think they can really help anyone enact what they have decided. But yeah, let's move on to the last step of the planet system, which is still. And then in the book, you talk about how companies can communicate with integrity. And in recent years, we've seen a lot of businesses being called out for greenwashing. And Sarah, you already mentioned that earlier in our chat. So could you tell us how businesses can make sure they avoid greenwashing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I should just pick up on the point there about pursuing progress, not perfection. Absolutely, this is about getting stuff done. The thing about good businesses is that it shouldn't be about being perfect, because there's no such thing as a perfect business. It's about acknowledging your imperfections and showing the world, your stakeholders, that you're working on them and you're improving them. And I think this is a really big and important part around the whole area of communications, because there is no doubt that greenwashing is a current problem, and that there are companies out there who are actively trying to mislead their customers. But I do think there's also people out there or instances where sometimes it's not deliberate greenwashing, it's more like just kind of simple, naive, or as I sort of said earlier, over enthusiastic marketing. And I think there's a difference between the two. And we are used to in the world of marketing, we're used to kind of lots of subjective stuff that we don't really have to qualify too much. But in the area of sustainability, it does require proof and it does require tangibility in order for it to have integrity. So in order to avoid falling foul of greenwashing, I think the most important thing to do is challenge all of your marketing claims. And this should be from a legal point of view, can we say this? But also from a moral point of view, should we say this? And I encourage, and the book encourages you to consider everything as if you are your greenest customer. And what might your greenest customer be wary of when it comes to a particular statement that you're making? And do they have any reason to be wary of it? Because is it untrue? Is it overly embellished? Or is it sort of simply trying to mask some kind of bad behavior in the background? And if that's the case, then go back, rethink it, reword it, and go again. Because eventually these things will come out and they will ultimately damage the reputation of your business. But my final point on that is you don't have to be perfect. Telling people about how difficult this is and sharing your journey, if you like, with stakeholders, I think is an important part. Being humble, being transparent, and yeah, showing kind of your imperfections, but what you're doing to improve them.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so we already mentioned that a little bit, but we all know that doing better by the planet and our communities is the right thing to do. But what business benefits does it bring to companies? Kevin, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Often when we start talking about sustainability, it's extraordinary, but the person who represents the company will say, so what's in it for us? What do we get out of this? And you think, oh, that's interesting, because you are asking that question upside down and back to front. It's not like that. They're not seeing the danger of what's going to happen if they don't attend to sustainability issues. And once again, I would stress, in the broadest sense of our definition. And so the straight answer to that question is that the biggest business benefit that being sustainable and ethical can bring to a company is that they'll still be in business. That's the top of the list, because many companies will go to the wall if they aren't properly dealing with these issues. Let me give you a few examples. Something is going to get your company eventually, and that sort of something could include legislation. Often that is introduced by governments, but sometimes it can be as large as, say, the whole of Europe. A quick example we have with the client is that once that legislation came in, they realized that they would no longer be able to sell a certain product in Poland from the 31st of December. So that is a serious diminution of their sales opportunity. It applies to supply chain issues, where everything can fall apart if you haven't got that properly attended to. In a lot of businesses that we work with, their inability to specify what they're doing on a range of sustainability criteria actually means that they are unable to tender or pitch for contracts because they don't even meet the inclusion criteria in the first place, let alone be acceptable to the customer that they're trying to win. And on top of all of that, of course, you're going to have better competition from others who are dealing with all this much better, and probably an increasing number of disaffected customers who won't like the fact that you're not attending to these issues at all. So when you draw all those together, actually, this is almost like a survival agenda for a thoughtful, modern, and what we call in the book, a resilient business. And so if anybody thinks that sustainability is, quote, the soft stuff, it isn't. It's actually the tough stuff. And any business that refuses to address them is potentially shooting itself in the foot.
Yeah, it really shows that it is a must for companies to take care of their sustainability credentials. And finally, because we've got some business owners and also employees listening to our podcast today, and some of them, they probably wish to work on their sustainability credentials. So, Sarah, what would be your best tips for them to start making progress towards that?
Well, first of all, I would say read the book, obviously. That's a good starting point. But if I were to whittle it down to just a couple of points, I think I would have to start with, you can't manage what you don't measure. So it's really important that a business today establishes its baseline data. And that's particularly in terms of carbon emissions. Establish that baseline data today, because then you've got something to work on. Then you've got something to improve upon and to look at in terms of reducing your environmental impact. Also, in terms of managing or measuring data, go out and ask your employees and your customers where they are at the moment in terms of sustainability. So again, that you can monitor that and show that you are improving. The second thing I think I would say is a phrase I often use, which is get comfortable with the uncomfortable. This sustainability is a challenge. Let's not try and sugarcoat it. It is a challenge for many businesses, and it will require new ways of thinking and new ways of operating. And it will inevitably need some additional resource, whether that's human or financial. And, you know, going back to that kind of getting the board on board, it's important that you get those uncomfortable conversations over and done with now so that you can actually move forward. And my last point, I would say, if a business is out there and it's really struggling to get started, then we do have a free self-audit, which is available on the sustainablebusinessbook.com website. And this is a fast 30 question audit from which you'll get an immediate report back. And that can prove a really kind of solid foundation for you to start getting conversations going.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much, Sarah, for those great tips. I'm sure they will be very helpful for anyone listening to us at the moment. And thank you both, Kevin and Sarah, for the great and insightful conversation today. It was a great pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks everyone for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. We are now also on TikTok, so make sure you follow us at Lit Publishing. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.